This episode of the Talentopoly podcast is brought to you by InfloAds. InfloAds is a targeted, affordable ad network. I'm a big fan of InfloAds and have been using them since day one to get the word out about Talentopoly. Here's why I like them so much. Each publisher agrees to show one high-quality ad on each page. The ads are a combination of image and text and run within a network such as web development. Quality is the emphasis. Not only are the ads high quality, but the publishers are some of the top sites in their industry. Forrest.com recently joined the network. I routinely get conversion rates of 0.3 to 0.6% on my ads. It's incredible. The team behind the service is easy to get a hold of and will work with you to make sure your ad campaigns go smoothly. Whether you're a publisher or an advertiser, I recommend you check them out. You can find more at InfloAds.com. Now on with the show. You're listening to episode 13 of the Talentopoly podcast, where we discuss some of the best links posted on talentopoly.com each week. I'm your host, Jared Brown, and because I can't find anyone else to host for free, I'm joined by...
Brandon Corbin.
And unfortunately, Steven Dixon is unable to join us tonight. Hopefully he'll be back next week, but he is sleeping soundly over in the UK right now, getting some shut-eye.
So this could be a really boring show.
Could be. We'll try to get by without him.
How you doing, Jared?
Good. I've been I traveled last weekend and didn't get back in until late on Monday, and getting over a cold as well. So just kind of. Were you going to ask where I'm going?
Oh no, but that was like telepathic. But go for it.
So I went out. We had a family function, a christening that we went and attended out in Massachusetts. And we also, my wife and I got married out on Block Island off of Rhode Island. So we kind of had we snuck a little anniversary one night trip over there while my mom watched our 18-month-old son. So that was kind of nice.
Oh, but you were sick.
Yep. And I'm just now starting to get over it.
Well, good. We're glad you're better.
Thank you. So
I get to go to Colorado tomorrow.
Awesome. What are you doing in Colorado?
My lifelong friend is, sorry about that. If you picked that up, my lifelong friend is, getting a divorce. And so my wife surprised me with a trip out there to kind of console him and, you know, go out and do whatever you do in Colorado.
Wow.
Yeah. Well,
not the best of circumstances, but that's really awesome. You're going out there.
She was a bitch. I'm kidding. Okay. Kind of. No. So I go out tomorrow and it should be really good. I haven't been out there since the wedding, ironically enough, that I was the best man. And he really should have listened to my best man speech because I talked all about the stuff that they went through.
Wow. How long ago was that?
4 years, maybe.
Okay.
No. 3 years. Yeah. About 3 years, something like that.
Wow.
Time. I don't know.
What are you drinking tonight?
I am drinking an awful wine, and this is what you get for buying wine at CVS. It is I think it's called Black Opal, and it's from Australia. It's a 2009 Cabernet Merlot mix, and it is disgusting.
How much was it?
Like $8.
Wow.
Yeah. But really, like we talked in past episodes, it does get better as it kind of burns your taste buds away. but yeah, this stuff's pretty nasty. What about yourself?
Have you seen those little wine juice box styled things you can get at the grocery store now?
No.
So it's like a personal sized, you know, like wine in a box, but this is like I can't remember the name, but back in the 90s, yeah, they had like the juice boxes for adults. Do you remember that?
What was it? Yeah. My dad surely knows.
It was like Boku or something like that. And so it's that size. It's a pretty healthy size juice box full of wine. And you can buy this at the store.
That is funny. I'm going to do it now.
Yeah, you got to try some. Our Safeway down the street actually has this other product. It's like in a foil deal, kind of like a Capri Sun. and they have them in the frozen food section. And it's actually a wine cooler, like margarita flavored strawberry. And they're frozen.
Yeah.
Have you tried one of those?
Yes, they're actually pretty damn good. Yeah, I bought some for the wife, and she didn't drink them. And so I'm like, we were on vacation. I'm like, yeah, I go up to the refrigerator, grab that, sit on the beach, let it melt. Oh, it was actually good. Pound like three of those, and no problems.
Yep. Yeah, it's not the best tasting stuff, but it's just so convenient. It's cool.
Yeah. It's just an alcoholic icy.
Right. Yeah, we've actually gotten those before. It's like four blocks from our house. We'll walk down there in the summertime, pick those up, and just walk back while sipping them.
Oh, that's awesome.
But tonight I am drinking a Sun King cream ale. Sun King, for anybody in Indianapolis, they're familiar with it. But anybody else, this is a local brewery that's blowing up pretty big. So I don't think they distribute much outside of Indiana right now, but they probably will. This is getting big.
Yeah, and you can they're at sunkingbrewing.com.
There you go. And they do a cool, I haven't been to it, but I think they do a pretty neat thing every Friday night where they have food and then they bring some kegs out. And one of my friends goes to this and always tries to get me to come along and I never can. But like 100, 200 people will show up for this and they have food trucks or just like food out in the parking lot area and serving up beer.
Seamless. Dude, I love this whole angle that businesses are going where there's food coming to me, there's beer coming to me. Upland, they sponsor a bunch of stuff. So I've had so much free Upland beer, it's not even funny.
Oh, Upland's good stuff too.
Mm-hmm. Mm. So much better than this ass wine I'm drinking right now.
Have you ever gotten good wine at CVS?
No.
So you continually strike out and keep going back?
I
knew,
yeah. Well, it was one of those things where I was like, I'm here. I just grabbed it. Yeah, I always want to try different things. So, I can't not say, hey, just because it's $8, it's not going to be good. So I figured I'd give it a shot, and it failed miserably.
Yeah. Now you know.
Yeah. Now I know.
So you downloaded iOS 5 already? You bastard.
I did.
I've not had a chance to download it yet.
Two guys at work who I'm always interacting with, they decided they couldn't wait the 2 days and they installed the Golden Master and they're like, here, you want it? And I was like, you know what? If I can't wait 2 days for the official release, I've got a problem. And so actually this is like the first time that I didn't install it early. And other than sitting there click, 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 waiting for it to say, yes, there's an update available. It started and it took me quite a while. I will say that the whole download process, again, everybody was trying to do it. The whole upgrade process, it still feels really clunky where it's like, you get that alert box. It's like, some of your stuff's not going to copy over. So you need to back it up or you need to do some weird thing. And then you do it and it still says it. And so you have all this kind of weird things and then your phone comes back and it's not always 100% right. Have you experienced that?
Yeah, I have. And I definitely know the feeling you're talking about where you're like, I'm going to do it anyway. But
yeah.
Man, I really hope it's all there when I come back. You back it up like two or three times, even though it doesn't really do anything.
Yeah, exactly. But so, everything came back. Well, at least all the settings came back. I did have to go and resync to get all my applications back on there. Luckily, all the data was there. But it was about a two-hour process to kind of get everything up and running. All in all, I will say the phone. So I have the iPhone 4. The phone is definitely feels faster. That I do feel like I'm having a faster experience, whether that's real or not. But as far as like that, when you're just using it, it doesn't really, there's not like a whole lot of new stuff. Now, the notifications are great. The notification center is awesome. The whole thing does feel snappier. But like I was excited to go home and show my daughter. I'm like, hey, look, I upgraded. And she's like, yeah, well, what can it do? And I'm like, whoop. And I swipe down the notification center and I'm like, yeah, that's about it. And I'm like, I can't think of anything else that's actually like I can say, oh, hey, yeah, you got to check this out. Reminders is cool, but it's very limited, very basic. I am excited for Siri, and I've now, really am questioning whether I'd get it for that because I've been fantasizing about a product like that for a long time. But yeah, all in all, it's definitely an awesome upgrade for free.
And for iCloud. You need iCloud.
But it all happens behind the scenes, right? So it's completely out of sight, out of mind. And it's kind of like, I don't know if I'm going to really appreciate it until some shit goes down and I really need it. Then I'm going to be like, okay, yeah, this is awesome. Read Later, I think, is cool for Safari. Safari definitely seems faster.
Right. It's like Instapaper.
Yeah, but now what I want to know is, in that Read Later, can I get that to sync with Safari on my computer? Because if I can do that, then I'd probably start using Safari.
I believe you can.
But I couldn't figure out how.
It's supposed to.
I'm playing with my phone right by my mic, and that's the sound you guys are hearing, if that's picking up. But yeah, I couldn't find that. You know what was funny too is they're talking about the camera on the home screen. I'm like, oh, that's cool, or on the lock screen. And I actually had a search. How the hell do I get the camera thing to show up on the lock screen?
You double tap the home button, right?
Well, of course. No one's going to – I mean, give that to any person who's not going to go search Google for how do I get that up, or who doesn't even know it's there. They're never going to know it's there unless they do it by mistake, which they do on a lot of the design patterns.
You know how the iPad has that little picture icon next to the lock bar? Why didn't they that's to show pictures, turn it into a picture frame. Yeah. Why not have a camera icon on the iPhone for that?
I don't know. You know So yeah, that's kind of a letdown.
I got a funny story about the shutter button. You know how they now let you use the plus the volume up button?
Yes, I know exactly what you're going to say.
Exactly. So QuickShot, this application that my wife and I released into the App Store. My wife had this brilliant idea to use the volume button, the actual volume up button, as the shutter. And she came up with this idea 3-4 years ago. I mean, obviously not an original idea. I'm sure lots of people thought of this sort of thing. But she was really stoked about it. We actually built the app. We submitted it. And, of course, they turned it down, saying it violated the human interface guidelines. You cannot misuse the volume button as something else. That clearly would be a bad thing to do. And here we are years later, and Apple's basically doing – or they are doing exactly that. And I guess only they can do that. I wonder – you know, are they now going to let other camera apps follow suit now that they've set a precedent?
So. Yep, they almost would have to.
You might need to update QuickShot.
Yes, you probably should. You could upgrade. Yeah, I would definitely try to resubmit it now.
Yeah. Well, we submitted it. We just had to take that feature out. We had lots of other features, and it actually did pretty well. But that was the reason for the app entirely in the first place.
Yeah, I think you should try it. Might as well. You probably have to update a bunch of it, because that was – what version did you build
up? It still works on 4 right now.
Oh, that's awesome.
Yeah, it works.
The other thing that I'm really disappointed about is I want this notification center on my lock screen.
It's not.
No, it's not. Well, it is kind of, right? It is like if I haven't been on my phone and I get notifications, it's there. And then I go and I open or I unlock the phone and then I lock it and I come back and it's gone. I want it like the jailbroken, and I can't remember what it was. It was like notified something. But it basically had all of these things, but it was always just right there on the lock screen. And it was great. It was invaluable. I mean, I use that more than any other feature of the iPhone. So now I'm going to probably, I'm sure somebody will do it with the jailbroke, but I wish they could just have that be my lock screen, because I would absolutely love it.
Yeah.
That's my update.
What does it show now? So you have it locked, and you come back to it after being away for an hour or so, and it has some notifications. How does it display that?
It displays them very similar to what you have on Notification Center. You know, in the box above the, you know, below the time and above the slider.
Right.
I unlock permanently gone. Yeah. And so then, you know, so that's one downside that I'm kind of like, damn it, I was really hoping to get that so I didn't have to jailbreak it. You got to do what you got to do.
Got to do it.
So that's my update with IE. Or
Using the new IE.
Using the new IE.
Very exciting. iPhone. Yes.
Very cool. IE 17. You'll understand why we're going to get there.
That day better not ever happen. But yes, so with Brandon's awesome segue, let's jump right into the articles.
Boom.
So, article number 1, browser market pollution, why you may soon be developing for 72 browsers. And this is posted by Anthony Pinozzo. This article is written by, Paul Irish. And he's saying that we're going to be living in a world where we're going to have to develop for a lot of different versions of Internet Explorer, unfortunately. And the reason is because the lifespan that Microsoft sets for each version of their browser is something ridiculous, like 9 years, 10 years, something like that, where you, unlike the other browser manufacturers that refresh the browser every 6 weeks, and you don't really have to worry about supporting Chrome 5 anymore because we're already on 14, you're going to have to support versions of IE 8, 9, 10 soon, you know, 11. It's just going to go on and on and on. You're going to have to test in all of these browsers, Brandon.
No, there's the surely this is not going to happen. And I understand the logic behind it, but that's saying that if Microsoft does not change their development practices, and my God, they would have to. There's no way in hell that they would be insane enough to do a 9 and make that a 9-year life cycle and then 10 and 11 and 12 without doing something like where it's just automatic update. Google has shown that you can get away with the automatic update. Now we just need to convince the corporate guys that allow it to happen. But God, please. This is the bleakest thing I've read online for quite a while, and I'm really upset.
It is. This is depressing. It can't happen. But you brought it up, the enterprise aspect of it, and that's really what's powering the choice by Microsoft to set these long lifespans for these things. You know, a lot of big enterprises are still stuck on 7 or 8, or, you know, they're not even thinking about moving to 9 yet.
But they got to change that. They're going to die if they don't. I mean, or at least I hope they would die if they don't. I mean, so my only rationale behind this is that this guy is wrong because Microsoft's going to say, hey, this is insanity. We really should change our development and release cycles and just release as much as humanly possible as we needing. But they probably won't. And you're right. And we're going to be doomed for the next 20 years of our developing lives.
Yeah. Well, at least I think with IE10, you're getting to a point where you do have a lot of your CSS3 that you expect to be there. You have a pretty capable and compatible JavaScript engine that's fast.
It'll be as good as Chrome 5 at least.
Right, at least. So you shouldn't have to, you know, I'm hoping that while there may be many versions of IE down the road that they're all going to overlap and we're going to have to support all these supposedly, that the really bad ones are going to get phased out sooner rather than later. And then we're going to just be left with these ones that are all kind of gradations of pretty, you know, good to pretty good to, hey, they're actually getting close to where other browsers are. So
I still, for the life of me, can't understand why anybody would want to build their own proprietary HTML engine.
Yeah, I don't know what the huge reason would be these days.
It doesn't make any sense to me. Your business, if your business is the browser, then build a better browser. But let's just say, okay, WebKit, hey, you won. You know, VHS, you won, and just go with it, you know, and then build your browser to take advantage and try to come up with new ways of interacting with it or whatever. But man, I don't know, that just seems like a whole lot of work when it's really not needed, and it only caused fragmentation in the market.
Yeah. At this point, though, they've already put so much time and money into it, I could not see them ever making that choice.
Sometimes you got to knife the baby.
There you go. All right, let's move on to the next article. Bunker App, the smoothest way for freelancers to manage their projects and invoices, posted by Adam Brown. Bunker App is a sweet little web app that lets you manage your invoices. You can create projects. You put your clients in this. You go ahead and create all your different invoices. And you can mark them as paid once you get paid. And the big thing here is that unlike FreshBooks and a lot of other invoicing apps that already exist, this one is so simple that it just has literally what I just said and nothing more to it. This thing is so simple.
Almost too simple?
Almost too simple. I did find myself wanting a little bit more out of it. I like the overall look of it. It's definitely got a nice aesthetic to it.
How does it work in Internet Explorer?
Well, in my primary browser, which is IE7. I didn't test it in IE. I don't use Internet Exploder.
It does look like, I mean, the interface is very app-like, and it definitely has like that Twitter sidebar thingy going on for it. And Now, does it take, I assume it doesn't do anything with taxes or try to calculate anything. It literally is just, here's my invoice, send it out. And does it do tracking, like the invoice was viewed or anything like that?
Nope. Not that I know. Well, I didn't actually try that, but I don't see anywhere where it would show me that. So I'm going to say no. It really is like you create a project and a project is just has a name and then you can attach tasks to your project. So you could use this as your task manager as well, project management. And then so, you have clients that are attached to projects and then these invoices are attached to clients. And that's, and you can have notes and like that. You can send stuff, you can trash it, and you can mark it as paid. Like, so I just went through all the features.
What I guess, you know, thinking about the guy who's building this, you know, obviously, I think this is his, you know, minimal viable product to go to market with. I wonder what the motivation of the product is overall. You know, maybe. Like, what who's he want to compete with, and you know, who do you use?
You know, I'm not embarrassed to admit, but I use Google Docs, just Excel spreadsheets. It works. It works really well for me. I don't use any app at all to do my invoicing.
Really?
Yeah, it works. And I can, my wife actually handles all the incoming payments. And I have another spreadsheet that's, you know, payments received. And she marks, she goes in there and I have all my Google Docs shared with her. And, you know, to me, I can then very easily customize my invoices to each of my clients' demands and not have to use an app to do that or pay for it.
So. I use paper and pencil, so, you know.
Yeah, I mean, we're pretty basic about it.
No, that's cool. That's good. Okay. Well, yeah, in that case, I don't know what the, you know, what the market is. Pricing, what's the pricing here? You can get it for free, and you can have two active projects and two invoices a month with unlimited clients. And then the Rockstar package, which is $5 a month, unlimited projects, unlimited invoices, and unlimited clients. So I assume this is a fairly new product.
Yeah, I'm assuming that as well.
Okay, because, you know, really to have just two packages and the biggest unlimited is only $5 a month. I would have, if I was him, I would have made another one that was like $20 a month with unlimited everything and have that Rockstar be something a little bit, you don't just go from two to unlimited. But again, the interface is beautiful and props to the guy. It almost seems like, you know, he was more of a design. So again, I'm picturing just one guy who's building this application. It could be completely wrong, but it seems like it was a designer who got like a Ruby on Rails tutorial about how to, you know, like you said, take a couple database tables and stick them together. But who knows? I mean, maybe, you know, this is, if you can get enough clients and then keep adding features to it, it could be a great app. But it's definitely beautiful.
Yep. Very cool. So hopefully more good stuff will be coming from Bunker App. Looking forward to it. Next article is introducing Google JS Test, fast unit testing of your JavaScript. So Google has released, like they do, cool code. And it is unit testing for your JavaScript, which this is desperately needed, in my opinion. Do you use unit testing, Brandon?
No, I don't. The way I look at it is that this has got to be for one of those applications that's just so crazy, like beyond anything that I'm ever going to build. You know, my JavaScript is usually very utilitary. Now, I guess if I was building an application on Node, then yeah, I could definitely see this.
That's just what I was going to ask you.
Yeah, so I'm not building anything on Node right now. I'm still back in using Laravel, which I just love.
Oh, nice.
I don't do any kind of testing like this. I mean, I build my own, and because I'm not classically trained, like I never went to school for development, I don't know what I don't know. So this, I'm sure, would be very helpful for finding things, maybe for a big group. I just don't think I just don't need it. Like if it doesn't work, then I know something's broken. And then I go fix it.
Right.
Is kind of the way that I look at it.
Well, like we were saying before we started the podcast, testing seems like something that's really useful for a mature product when you're in a maintenance mode with it.
Yeah.
And yes, if you, yes, you know, I would say most web apps today have a fair amount of JavaScript powering them, interacting with the server-side code, if not entirely, you know, like even a bigger amount of business logic being in the JavaScript, that's kind of where, you know, things are going right now. Yeah. Then having unit tests in JavaScript, and there really isn't much other than this to even do that. So
yeah,
that's kind of nice to now have something to really use for this.
Well, if any of the listeners have actually used this, give us your feedback.
Yeah, I'd love to hear that.
And I wonder if they're going to then release the Google Dart test.
Right. Or Google Dart is so good, you don't need to unit test it. This is for crappy JavaScript.
Did you play around with that at all or look at the code snippets that they released?
No, I didn't.
Yeah, it looks fairly interesting. It has a lot of it does kind of follow this style of, it feels like JavaScript, but it's got inheritances, it's got a class, real class definitions. It actually has like a lot of features in it. It's got some syntax that I'm kind of like, what the hell is that? And but you know, all in all, it looks fairly interesting.
Nice.
Yeah, that's about as smart as I'm going to get on that topic.
Well, let's move on to our next article, which is grained.org, online grain gradient image generator. Yeah.
We've got texture.
Because CSS gradients are just not there yet. That's their slogan. And you can use this to create some pretty nice textured grain or gradations here. So you can do a vertical gradient, horizontal, get a JPEG of it, or a PNG, and just kind of go nuts with it. Do kind of nice, really nice gradients that you can't accomplish in just CSS.
You know, I'd like to see that they had other than just grain. You know, I'd like to see maybe a couple other kind of textures that they could apply to it.
That would have been really nice.
But, you know, I think it's really, it is helpful if, you know, to just come here and do it, grab it, throw it in your background. I think I always go back to, you know, designers who are just getting into the web would definitely love to have this. But hell, I mean, I think I'll be using it too, just for a couple things. But really the, then again, I don't know. Maybe, maybe not. It kind of just depends. have you done anything with this yet?
I'm playing with the sliders right now.
I'm clicking around on the colors.
I'm pretty happy.
It's amazing.
About it. Yeah.
I'm making a rainbow right now.
I just spent hours doing this. Honestly.
I think I just broke my browser with it too.
It's fast though. Whatever they're using to generate these images is wicked fast.
I don't know. Mine's not working.
That might be what I'm actually more interested in finding out about is how they're generating those images and.
Let's get them on the show and find out. Oh, it's Canvas.
Oh.
Well, so they're displaying it with Canvas. Now, does Canvas have a get as image? Oh, you can click around in it too.
Yeah.
Gotcha. So you can drag and, oh, that's actually not that. Ooh, that's kind of cool.
Have you played with these web apps that try to mimic Photoshop in your browser?
Yes.
Some of them, not too bad.
They're getting pretty close. Again, I think what happened, you know, with Photoshop being 13, 14 years old, whatever it's at now.
It's so expensive.
It's expensive, and it has so many features that, like, all the us who got into Photoshop right when it came out, you know, we were able to get into it real quick because it only had, like, you know, 20 features. Now it's got 50,000 features. So I really do think that the web the design tools that are coming out really will be that kind of next migration. So the kids who are playing around on it doing, you know, photo manipulation or whatever, they'll start just getting better and better and better, more features to a point where they're doing amazing stuff that's blowing our photo stuff or Photoshop stuff out of the water.
Right. Do they have a Photoshop in the cloud thing?
I can't take them serious. No, I they do have something. But again, I'm not going to say what it is.
Well, the thing that they have,
I really don't know the details. But every tool that I've used, yeah.
Well, the thing that they have that that these other companies make that work in the browser, actually, you know, I use that a lot of times when I'm at client sites and I don't have Photoshop available, and it does a lot of what I need.
Yeah. Yeah, I just can't take them seriously, but that's because I'm an old man, right? That it's like, hey, it doesn't have Photoshop. It doesn't have, you know, 10,000 features that I want. But again, I'm going to be replaced by these new kids who are doing almost all this stuff on the browser. So like when my daughter's doing it, when my daughter's, you know, doing her stuff on there, she just uses it all the time.
Yeah, well, that's cool. And Pixelimator is another one in the Mac App Store that I see a lot of people using lately. I think it's $50 for it or something.
You know what I have been doing though?
What?
Procreate on the iPad.
Damn.
And I have a stylus with a little rubber tip, and I do art on my iPad at night. I just sit there and I do different kinds of paintings and whatnot, and I love it. And I'm actually starting to get better. I'm starting to learn the different techniques you can do with it. But yeah, so that's kind of a transition. But yeah, it's called Procreate. I think it's like $1.99 or something.
$1.99.
Yeah, it's awesome though.
Oh, I need to get that.
Yeah, it's very cool.
Cool. All right, let's move on to our next article. It is "I Hate Almost All Software" by Ryan Dahl, I think is how you say that. All right, so this is the guy who created Node.js, and he wrote a little Google Plus rant saying that software has become too complex, and the software that we, the platform that we all build on these days, those platforms are too complex as well. And that he's really come to understand the ideals of Unix lately with file descriptors and processes and just having everything pretty small. But even Unix doesn't get away unscathed with a lot of the environment variables and all these things that you just have to know about to be able to build a basic, good user experience these days. And he says that the complexity of it is what dooms this software, is that eventually you're going to have to rewrite this whole stack because it's just gotten too complex building on top of each of itself. So I don't know.
It's a great article, and everybody should read it. And I think we all would agree, you know, like, especially I always go back to when I first got into Linux. Right. And just like, oh my God, what in the hell is all this? I mean, this is a mess and nothing makes sense. Everything's out of order. But, you know, you go and you get onto a forum and you ask questions like, yeah, you dumbass, all you have to go over here and do this, this, da, 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 da. So I can't agree enough, but I don't see any way of just, because of course we all would love just to kind of, you know, again, knife the baby and start from scratch. But it's like any time that you have humans involved, it's inherently, their entropy is going to happen. The systems are always going to just grow, get more complex, and start breaking down. It's just what systems do. So yes, at some point someone might come up with a whole new way of doing it, but who's going to do that? You know, who's going to go all the way back to the beginning and deal with the simplicity of a new system that's not going to have all the features that we're used to? I don't know. But yeah, it's a great article. I love what this guy has to say.
Well, what about iOS not having a file system that you have to program for, or Windows 8 having Metro now that you can just build apps in a lot quicker and easier? I mean,
You know, it does. I mean, I definitely think that it does. But, you know, if you want to get back down into the nitty gritty, which this guy is talking about, of the systems, they're still all pretty complicated. Now, yeah, iOS, you know, makes a lot of that go away. But all in all, it's still like, if you, you know, when you get in there and you get in with your terminal and your jailbroken phone, you still see that all the Unix madness is there. It's just been masked thanks to Apple.
Right. And his conclusion in this article, this rant, is that if you're anything that distracts your energy from having to solve directly the problem that you're trying to solve for your customer, your user, that's just shit that you shouldn't have to worry about. Yeah. So really, it pisses him off, apparently, because he's having to be distracted by all of that bullshit.
Yep.
And he just wants to focus on making something cool for users. So I totally get that. I like that. And that's
yeah. And the second to the last sentence is, no one gives a fuck about your glib object model. I love it.
It is awesome. All right. Next article is Sentia.io source, optimized fast image delivery, posted by Marcos Zanona. Sentia has a couple of nice libraries like the extension JS and the Sentia Touch. And now they're adding to that with this pretty cool service. In the world of responsive web design, a lot of responsive web design today delivers one large image for the desktop, and then on smaller screens, all they're doing is resizing that once it gets downloaded. It still means you have to deliver that large image to the smaller device, which usually has a smaller pipe, you know, bandwidth going into it. Where the new thing I've kind of started reading about is seeing how people are saying you should deliver an optimized image for that screen size. And Sentia.io makes this ridiculously easy to do. You just supply your JPEG or your PNG, whatever it is, to Sentia. And then when the client requests a specifically sized image that first time, it creates it and caches it. Now you've got that size of it from then on, and it's going to deliver exactly that size for that client each time.
So now, is this a server-side thing that you have to run?
Yeah, you don't run it. It's a service.
But they run it, though. Yeah. Okay, so it's a service completely that they handle. Yes. And you just, okay, gotcha.
And I'm sure there's some pricing, or will be some pricing. I don't see pricing listed right now, but...
Yeah, so you just literally go, you just, okay, I got you. So all you do is you just add, source.src.sentia.io/, and then the path to your image.
Which is also brilliant, because you don't have to do an initial upload even.
Yeah.
You just code You just code this in, and you could just put a little, you could just append or prepend that string on all of your image links, all your image URLs, and just do that at the application level in whatever you're doing.
Yeah, I wonder.
Just turn this on, like, boom.
Hopefully, yeah, since they don't say anything about pricing, I mean, it would be great for someone who's starting up. I mean, I don't think businesses are going to jump on this until they know, okay, now we're going to charge you, or even how they're going to charge, and I wonder how fast it is.
Yeah. No, and eventually you might want to take this in-house, but at least to get started, this seems like a quickest way to do it.
These are the same guys that do how do you say their name? Sentia?
I say Sentia.
Sentia Touch, Sentia Animator, which is a CSS kind of, you know, flash thingy. What was the one you were talking about? EXTJS? Is that the one?
Yeah, EXTJS4. It's a pretty good. If you're doing intranet apps or you're doing enterprise apps, it has grid layouts in it. It's got some decent charting library stuff. A lot of the stuff you need for those types of apps. You do have to pay for it, but it's pretty slick. I've evaluated it for a few projects.
Did you go with it?
I did not. Because,
why not?
I kind of pushed back and I wanted to build, you know, really when I build an app nowadays, I try to make sure it will work on a mobile device and especially iPad if it's an intranet device. I mean, intranet app. And grid systems are not going to play very well on an iPad. So I try to, you know, think a little further. And actually the Kendo UE is going to have a grid system. It's coming out in, like, I looked at the roadmap and it says they're going to have a grid system coming out in November added to their library. And you will have to pay for that library too, because they know when they're doing grid systems and charting libraries, apparently really the people that do that are intranet apps and enterprises. You don't see a lot of like Twitter clones needing charting libraries and, you know, grid system layouts, or not grid system, but grid layouts, table type layouts with like sort this column and, you know, Excel style stuff.
Sure.
So Kendo though says that they, everything Kendo UE has in it is also made to work on a touchscreen. So I'm kind of waiting for that. And at that point, maybe I'll finally give in and say, okay, I'll build you your table layout with Kendo UE and knowing it's going to work on the iPad and on Android phones and all the rest of it.
Did we talk about this in a past episode?
We did. We mentioned Kendo UE. That's how I found out about it. Was somebody posted it on Townopoly and we talked about it.
Yeah, it's pretty slick looking.
It is, and it's all built on jQuery, which is the other thing that I do like things built on jQuery, because that's what we standardize on when I do Ruby. You know, the guys that I work with when we do Ruby on Rails apps, it's all jQuery.
Yep, same here.
All right, let's talk about Sugar, which is a JavaScript library for working with native objects, posted by Tony Brown. And Sugar, this is just a way to add a little sugar to your JavaScript, sweeten it up a little bit. So you can try to do things that you couldn't normally do in JavaScript. So some of the features are arrays. You can do a little bit nicer initialization of arrays, kind of what we're used to in other languages. Your strings you can deal with better. You can do starts with a dot each on it. You can do some cool stuff there, a dot split.
Oh, that dot each is cool, actually.
Yeah.
Yeah, because you can just do dot each with a regular expression in there.
Exactly.
That's nice. I like that.
Numbers.
First and from, yeah. Jeez.
They have dot round, dot format. I could see once you start using this, you probably don't want to ever be without it.
Oh, God, date, create, and you can pass in strings. Oh, that's really nice. And then it comes out as a true date. And what's cool about this, too, is that it doesn't actually screw with anything. It just goes through and it just adds all this functionality onto the, you know, to the objects that already exist in JavaScript. So it's not going to go and just totally mangle anything that you have.
Yeah.
So it's kind of, somebody compared it to underscore.js and... But man, this is slick. My God, I wish I would have looked at this a little bit earlier. I'm actually going to put this into a project that I'm working on right now.
Yeah, it's like, why wouldn't you use something like this? I don't really see.
How big is it? Do you know?
Let's see. Where's the download? It's up on GitHub. And then they have a download here.
15K GZ.
Yes, 15K. Nice.
Okay. Yeah, that's not too bad.
All right.
Wow, that's cool. That's definitely something that is well worth checking out.
And they're saying it's different than underscore.js, because that's one of the questions they have here is why would you use this instead of underscore? It takes a very different tact with the what and how it chooses to implement. So it modifies native objects and is more concerned with intuitive syntax, where underscore JS leaves native objects alone and is more oriented toward performance. So in case you were wondering, that is what makes this stand apart from underscore.
Yeah, and so they say, Sugar not? And Sugar is not a framework for Ajax, animation, or DOM manipulation. In fact, Sugar is not tied to the browser in any way, so this could fit perfectly with your Node projects as well.
Absolutely. It's kind of refreshing, too. I haven't seen a JavaScript thing that doesn't work with animation and DOM or is a framework or plugin. Exactly. I like it.
Very cool. And go ahead.
Oh, no. Exclusive preview of the hottest CSS specs.
Dude, this title is such bullshit.
It is. Exclusive. Okay,
exclusive. We've got an exclusive preview from a bunch of people who've posted online of what they want CSS to actually do in the future. And we've compiled it into a blog post. So we don't even know, they're not even talking about what spec this would actually go into, but going through talking about some of the great things that would, you know, we could get into, the one that really pops out for me is the colon matches. And so what this allows you to do is you could have like D or div and then a paragraph that, and then colon matches, and you can put in other tags. So you can kind of start doing conditionals in your CSS natively, you know, opposed to all the other ones that we've talked about in the past. The floats looks, this would be really cool to be able to start floating text and almost doing text wraps, you know, like in InDesign and a lot of the design tools you had, you could draw a circle and you could have text wrap just within the circle. And so you should be able to start doing things like that. Some of the image gradients, they've got something called bearing angle, and I'm not exactly sure what that is, but it looks like you'll start having masks. The other thing that was really cool in here, and this is definitely an interesting one, we have no idea if this any of this stuff would actually go into it, but clipping. So you could start doing clipping with different objects. So, you know, you can take a circle and clip out a corner of it and make it look like Pac-Man, right? So you can start doing things like you can do in Illustrator where you do punches and, you know, merges and things like that. But that looks like it could be a really, really nice function that would give you a lot of design flexibility just using the DOM. You know, we've already seen the kind of icons people can do just with CSS. Now with this like clipping where you can start getting really detailed of, oh, I want it to be exactly here and look, I can make Pac-Man. And then transformations. I haven't really done anything with CSS transformations, to be honest with you.
Yeah, me neither.
I feel kind of like a douchebag because, you know, Patrick, my designer at work, he's really playing around doing some amazing stuff with it, but I haven't done anything with it. The article is definitely the title is more impressive than the actual content, but they do have a lot of good proposals, and I'd like to see some of them go in there. The floats, the flex box would be great where I can start maybe center things like I used to be able to do with tables. And they've got some different kinds of selectors. But all in all, it's, you know, I wouldn't say you're going to go here and be blown away, but again, we should keep up to date with what people are trying to propose.
There you go. So that was your exclusive.
That's your exclusive, ladies and gentlemen.
Jeez. All right, article number 9. Responsive web design is boring. So there it is.
Yeah, I've said it. Thank you very much, ladies and gentlemen.
We're done.
So what was this guy's stance?
He's basically, the Boston Globe refresh, which made a lot of news recently, that the Boston Globe came out with a whole new design that's super responsive. Good for them. They're really modern now. And I guess it rubbed them the wrong way that was their feature. That being responsive was, hey, look, we're responsive now.
It's awful.
Yeah.
Oh, my God. I have this.
Yeah, it's pretty basic looking. I mean, it's totally nasty. Responsive. But it does. What else does it, you know, what else is new? Okay, that's great. And you just should be optimizing for different screen sizes. You know, he doesn't have a problem with responsive web design. He's saying, yeah, that's kind of expected. So what else did you do? That's really cool. And there's not a lot else that is really cool. So that's his whole thing is if you're going to do it, and he gives some great examples of other sites that, you know, he says are great examples of responsive web design plus just a great website that has good features, and look at how well this works for them.
Yeah, I can totally see his point. I mean, it is. It's very the way I look at it is. So I'm sitting here as we're talking, and I'm like, you know, dragging my window back and forth, seeing it as it crunches to all the different sizes. But really, you need about three. Yeah. You know, you need three basic sizes. You need the wide for the browser. You need the little bit skinnier for your 7, and then you need, you know, your mobile phone. But yeah, this thing is atrocious. I mean, it really is, and I can't believe that they actually went out saying that this is, like, you know, a great new feature that we have, because it is garbage, ladies and gentlemen. And the content still sucks too.
Did you check out Food Sense? This one's kind of cool. It's a neat one.
Right now,
and I don't know. Are they doing animation on that as it switches between them?
I went to the wrong one.
It looks animated. Because as it's resizing, parts of it, there's a very nice transition that's happening on those grabber images.
Oh, yeah.
And then the little tabs or whatever that come up under the slides, the slideshow, those kind of came out. Like, they were actually, I mean, these people went way all out to really make a nice experience for this.
Yeah, because it looks like they've got about 5 or 6 different states.
Yeah.
Damn.
That is cool.
Yeah, it's a nice looking site. Again, you definitely, you know, these guys versus the Boston Globe. I mean, that I do see where the Boston Globe people were like, oh my gosh, this is going to be a big task, because they try to stuff so much content onto that homepage.
Right.
But yeah, to say again, this is not like, you should not, like you just said, this isn't a feature. You know, this is just a functionality of the website, and, you know, great. It works on all my devices. That's awesome. Congratulations.
All right, last article. Scalable and Modular Architecture for CSS, posted by David Bunomo. Sorry if I completely butchered that last name. So I don't know. Why don't you talk about Brandon?
Sure. I mean, this guy goes through and he kind of talks about, look, he's been doing this a lot. And so he's just kind of come up with almost a framework for how he does his CSS and what his suggestions are. It's a very big article, and it's got tons of features on there. But the one thing I do like about it is when somebody goes through the trouble of saying, okay, you know, here's what our base CSS is going to be. Let me go back to this homepage so I can actually. So he basically has, you know, 4 main files where he's going to have the base CSS, is going to have a layout CSS, a module, and a state.css. The things that are great about doing this is if we all can agree on a format that we're going to follow, then it makes it really easy for other people to come in and start working with it. Even if you have to go out and hire somebody new, you can say, here, go to this URL. This is the design patterns that we followed, and blah, 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 blah. You know, he goes through a lot of different things. Again, you know, in all fairness, I'm going to butcher this as well because I didn't read it fully in depth. But he does go through, and he's got some weird naming conventions for what does he call them? He's got layouts, and he has his states. So everything that's a layout has an L dash some name to it, and states have S dash. So he goes through some pretty weird naming conventions. But I don't know. I think he's got a lot of good stuff in there. I think it's overcomplicated, in my opinion. But nonetheless, I think we need more people who are willing to go out there and just kind of put it all out there and say, this is the way it needs to work, and we should all follow it. And hopefully we can kind of come to some sense. Because every time that I start a new CSS file, I'm like, I'm going to reinvent the damn wheel, right? I don't follow, just like with my wines, I don't want to follow anything again. I want to try to come up with something better. And every time I kick myself in the ass, where if I would just sit here and read this whole thing and just say, okay, I'm going to follow this to a T, I know my life would probably be better.
How do you organize your CSS?
Dude, it's a mess. So again, I'm an artist first. And so when I create, you know, I have my chunk of clay, and I just start chipping away at things. And so I just go, and it's a madhouse. Like, my code, JavaScript and CSS, my HTML is almost always, you know, fairly well organized, but my JavaScript and my CSS are always just nasty until I'm ready to launch. Then once I go in and I do it to launch, I go and I really kind of reorganize, and I kind of clean things up, and I put it into a sense that I know if somebody else gets in there, they'll be able to make sense of. But pretty much, the way I do it is I just have a main.js. I'll have a reset that I'll always just kind of throw up at top there. But then I have a main.css. And that main just has basically everything until I know what I'm dealing with. And then once I know what I'm dealing with, then I start kind of reorganizing it and doing it. But, you know, I think I should probably read this and actually say, okay, I'm going to do this one time, because once I do it, then I'll be able to go and find everything. He does try to break it out just like you would in an application, you know, where you try to separate different chunks of code. And it does do a pretty nice job.
Yeah, it seems pretty good. With Ruby on Rails, I generally do my CSS, like, you know, for each controller. So I have a CSS file for each, you know, maps to each controller. I find that
really.
Yeah.
So then are you including each of those, or are you merging them together into a single file?
Right now I'm including each of them, but I need to merge them together.
Okay. Yeah. All right.
So, because that's the nice thing too, is I would say, don't be shy about organizing your CSS into multiple files, because at the end of the day, you should be compiling it together, minifying it. And
yeah.
I need to do that with Talentopoly. I haven't done that yet, but I know that's exactly what I need to be doing with it. And then it allows you to organize you however you want. Yeah.
Yeah.
You don't have to, you don't have to put it all in one CSS file. So, because I don't like big, long files. I find them hard to read and maintain.
Yeah, so I like breaking it up. Mines are ridiculous. And I use comments like out the ass, every comment. So then I can just search. Ding, ding, ding. Oh, there it is.
Oh, that's cool.
And so I'm searching constantly in my source code.
All right. Well, that was our last article. So I think we're going to end it there, Brandon. But thanks for listening, everybody. And you can tweet us anytime at Talentopoly on Twitter. And we also love when people subscribe to our RSS feed. Find us on Instacast or hit us up on iTunes. So until next week, we will keep finding great articles for you. Have a good one.